From WNYC Studios, this is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman, and we're coming to you from the Jerome L. Green Performance Space in New York City. This is part four of our series, Other People's Food, our look at the intersections of food and race and culture. And if this is the first episode in the series that you're hearing, like, this isn't serial. It's not like you're not going to be able to follow what's going on. But I would say maybe go back and listen to episode one first, because there'll be a little bit of context that would be helpful. All right, joining me now, it took me like an hour today just to figure out how to narrow down my first guest's introduction, because it could have gone on for pages. From Soul Train to Do the Right Thing, from White Men Can't Jump to Fearless, Lackawanna Blues, Pineapple Express, Lies in Plain Sight, Nurse Jackie, and even Dora the Explorer. She's been nominated for an Emmy, a Golden Globe, an Academy Award. Her autobiography is Handbook for an Unpredictable Life, How I Survived Sister Renata and My Crazy Mother and Still Came Out Smiling with Great Hair. Please welcome the one and only Rosie Perez. Wait, was that supposed to wait till you sit down before I sit down?
Oh, it doesn't matter.
You've done more talk shows than I have.
Yeah.
I feel like usually that. Yeah, we'll leave it at that. Well, first of all, Rosie, I want to thank you for being here. You guys should know Rosie has been up since 5 o'clock in the morning. She's at a 12-hour TV shoot and still managed to come here to be with us tonight. So thank you, Rosie. So what have you been eating lately?
Oh, my God. What have I not been eating lately is the question. Actually, I'm under the weather right now. I have a little bit of cold. So I have been eating one of my cold remedies from my aunt, Anna, that you've read in the book, is garlic soup.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you said, yeah. It's nasty as hell. But, you know, but if you drop an egg in it, it makes it a little bit more tasty.
That's so interesting, because my wife's family is from Slovakia, and they're all about garlic soup with an egg in it, too.
Really?
In Czechoslovakia.
Who knew?
I know. How do you do it?
How do I do it?
Yeah, tell me about it.
What do you mean, how do I do it? You put freaking garlic in chicken broth, and then you drop an egg in it.
Okay.
You know, that's basically it. But you put like a mess of garlic, and the best way to do it is you put a couple of whole garlics in it, but you also try to crush as many garlics as possible, pieces of garlics in there too, and just let it simmer. Don't let it boil. Just let it simmer, so all the oil comes out of the garlic, and you have all the right stuff that can go into your body. But you know, I am Puerto Rican. I don't know if you've noticed that. I still it's so insulting when people go, "Do you still eat rice and beans?" And I go, "Are you still an idiot?" You know? Yes, I still eat rice and beans. So yes, I still eat a lot of Puerto Rican food, but I like all kinds of food.
Can I ask you, why exactly is that insulting to you?
Because they wouldn't ask an American, you know, "Do you still eat meat and potatoes?" You know, it's just, why would you ask me that? You know, is that what you see? You don't see me as a human being first. You see me as rice and beans first. And so therefore, that's why it's insulting. It doesn't take away my pride for my culture at all. But it's just an asinine question. And I get asked a lot of asinine questions, unfortunately, when it comes to my nationality. You know what I mean? What nationality are you?
Jewish, I guess.
Jewish.
My ethnic group, yeah.
Well, wouldn't it be insulting if I said, "Did you have gefilte fish today?"
To be honest, I don't know.
Okay, if you were asked if you had gefilte fish every single day by someone you never met before, you would get tired of it.
Yes.
Okay.
I would definitely get tired, and I agree. I would certainly think it was a dumb question to ask.
Right.
But what's interesting, this is one of the things, I'm glad you brought this up because this is something we've sort of been exploring in different ways in the series, is if someone did that to me or someone came up to me and was like, oh, what, you're Jewish? Do you eat bagels all day or bagels and lox? Like, I would be like, no, I live in America. I eat all different kinds of things just
like
you.
By the way, do you know who H&H Bagels are? You know H&H, the famous H&H Bagels? It is freaking Hernandez and Hernandez.
Right.
I swear to goodness. I swear. Yeah. Holla to all the Latin people out there. You know? But seriously, it's Hernandez and Hernandez.
Right.
But they knew if they put Hernandez and Hernandez Bagels, no one would buy them.
Right.
Because they know people are freaking racist. So, but if it's H&H, they're like, oh.
But would you go to eat at Goldberg's Puerto Rican restaurant?
Yes, I would, because I'm from Brooklyn. Chino Latino, baby. Everybody crossed in that island. I mean, everybody did. So you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's, you know, only if they could cook it well and they respected the culture and they knew how to do it right, I would go in there. If they didn't, I wouldn't.
I guess what I'm sort of trying to get at, and I don't know, this is something I'm trying to wrap my brain around, and maybe you can help me, is like the sensitivity around that issue of sort of being put into a box based on your anyone's race or ethnicity and their people making stupid assumptions or asking dumb questions about the food that you eat. It's like, I can honestly say that like while if someone asked me that question, those types of questions, I would not be offended. I might think it was dumb or a little ignorant, but I wouldn't be offended. And I don't know, is that just me? Or is there some other reason, some other difference?
I think it's because maybe you're not of color. And I think that there's a difference. You know what I mean? There's a difference in there because it's an assumption that you have never ventured out and haven't eaten outside of your culture, that you're limited, you know, in the ways of the world. And so it has a lot of negative connotations to it. So I think so it's a little different. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
And so, you know, and especially asking a Puerto Rican from New York, I mean, it's like, come on, you turn every corner, there's a different type of food that's offered to you. You know, if they assumed that I had never eaten caviar when I was younger, then I would get it. I wouldn't be insulted. Yeah, well, I'm from Bushwick. No, I haven't eaten caviar, you know?
Coming up, my conversation with Rosie Perez continues. She'll talk about the dual existence that was her childhood, where she went back and forth between her aunt's very Puerto Rican home in Brooklyn and an abusive Catholic convent.
The nuns tried to beat the Spanish language out of me. At a Muslim, you know, and I remember there was a joke, a terrible joke I said. Oh my God, I got punished forever for it. Because she was like, I said, why do we always have to speak English? She goes, because it's the language that's in the Bible. I go, Jesus isn't bilingual. I'm confused. How the hell is everyone else going to understand him? Smack, smack, smack. Right?
Plus, she'll talk about connecting with her roots through food on her first trip to Puerto Rico as a child. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC Studios. I'm Dan Pashman. This is part four of our series on food, culture, and race, other people's food. Here's a quick recap of some of the things we talked about in the first three episodes. In part one, Sporkful listener Nick Cho, who's Korean-American, took issue with me putting my own spin on Korean food.
So when people treat your cultural institutions as so flippantly, that's where I think it can rub people the wrong way, rub people like me the wrong way. It's a little bit like, here's your grandmother, here's how it could make her hotter.
In that episode, I also talked with celebrity chef Rick Bayless, who discussed what it's like to be a white chef cooking Mexican food.
Because my name is not Hispanic, I can't mess with this stuff very much. And I realize that, and I accept that.
In part two, we learned about why we're willing to pay more for Italian food than Mexican. And no, it's actually not about the food at all. We also heard from African-American cookbook author Nicole Taylor. She talked about going through a phase when she wouldn't eat the foods she grew up with.
I totally did not eat any pork. I called it all slave food. I'm like, I'm not eating the old school neck bones and rice. I just thought it was like, you know, it was poor people's food.
In part three of our series, I talked with civil rights icon Joe McNeil of the Greensboro Four. Their protest helped desegregate restaurants across the South. Mr. McNeil told me about what inspired him to act.
It came to a head at a Richmond bus station. I ordered a hamburger and was told I had to go to the rear of the bus station. And that ticked me off.
All three of those podcasts are available now wherever you got this one, so I hope you'll check them out. Now, back to my conversation with Rosie Perez. Rosie's parents were never married. In fact, they had split up by the time she was born. She spent the first 3 years of her life living with her aunt in Brooklyn, although she thought her aunt was her mother. Her birth mother suffered from mental illness. And when Rosie was three, her birth mother came back into the picture and had Rosie sent to live in a Catholic convent in upstate New York that Rosie called the home. And Rosie spent almost 10 years shuttling back and forth between the nuns upstate and her aunt back in Brooklyn, where she spent her summers and holidays and some weekends. It was a split existence. Rosie says her aunt's home was very loving, very Puerto Rican. But in the convent, the nuns tried to force every ounce of Puerto Rican culture out of her. It was an abusive place.
The first night I saw a little girl get beat viciously with a paddle until her little bottom bled because she peed the bed. And when it came for mealtime, I didn't want to eat. And then when I was presented with the food, they put this gray-looking slab of whatever in front of me, and it had gray-looking gravy on top. And I said, "What is that?" And they said, "That's meat." And I said, "Meat's not brown, it's white." Because we were so poor, I never had a steak. So I thought that meat was chicken or pork. And they said, "Eat it. And if you don't eat it, you're going to get, you know, punished and spanked." And I just saw the other girl get beaten. So I tried to eat it. And I remember just, I threw up all over the plate. And it was really, and, you know, one of the girls was like, "You can't throw up. They're going to make you eat your throw up." I go, "No, they won't." And they used to do that. And even to this day, I have like this PTSD kind of reaction to red meat, which is kind of good because it is disgusting anyway. You know, so, you know, but yeah, so it was strange. It was very, very strange existence. And my salvation was the weekends and the summers and the winter breaks because I got to go home. That at that time, we lived in Williamsburg South on Lee Avenue in Wallabout. And I smelled, you know, benil, which is roasted pork shoulder, and the rice and beans. I knew I was home. I knew I was home, and I would just stuff my face, you know. And I became like a really greedy slob, you know, and I still am a really greedy slob, you know. But and it was because of that. It's like good food and colorful food and good smelling food and hearty food that blessed your tummy and your soul.
Tell me about some of your memories of being in the kitchen with your aunt.
Oh, that was everything. That was everything. I used to love how she would pull a chair up to the stove and let me wash the rice. I loved that. And I would watch her cook, and I learned every little thing. And even as I got older, I did not know how to use any type of measuring tools, because she would use her hands to measure everything. And she would say, "You see the first line in the middle of your hand?" I go, "Yeah." She goes, "The second line, that's a teaspoon." Like, that just that much. And if it goes over here by where it hits your finger, that's a tablespoon. And, you know, because if she was like, "How much you say?" "A teaspoon." "Okay, like that door there goes. Okay, put it in." You know? And, you know, and it was our special time, just laughing and talking endlessly of hours of just cooking, and especially on the weekends. And that's why I'm a fabulous cook now, because I was never instructed. It was just part of the conversation of how I learned how to cook. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And I think that art of learning to cook through family and conversation is lost. It's lost. It's like a lost art. You know, it's a loss. I don't know what other word I can say, but love. It's a loss of love, you know? Because that's what makes food good, is when you put the love into it and you put the time into it and you put the experience, and then there's a story, you know, to the meal.
Yeah. That's well said. Tell me about your first trip to Puerto Rico.
My first trip to Puerto Rico was very, very bittersweet because I was just kind of nervous that my father was going to treat me differently, because my sister and brother, and they had from his wife, were down there. And
this
I was
I'm sorry to interrupt, but just so everyone, so this was your birth father?
My birth father.
You were going down to Puerto Rico to be with
every
him.
Every summer, yeah.
And how old were you the first time you went?
I was very, very young.
Yeah.
I was still in in elementary school.
Six, seven years old.
And
So he was now with his wife at the time, and he had his own kids down there.
The wife that he had before he met my mother.
Well, okay.
Scandalous. That's why you see all this fire. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Yeah. Right, yes. So it was bittersweet and you were nervous.
You turned red.
I'm blushing, Rosie.
Yes, I was nervous because, you know, you're like, oh, you know, they have my father all the time. I only have my father during visits. My first time there, I was very, very nervous. And I remember my stepmother making me so upset because she was making arroz y candules, that's rice with pigeon peas, and she was making patele. It's like, I can't describe it. The closest thing is maybe like to a tamale, but that is not really, not made with cornmeal, but made with green plantains. And she made me... she made me a hamburger and french fries. And I remember I got so angry at her. I got so mad at her. They were treating me like if I was American. And that was so, that hurt me. I mean, it hurt me, and I didn't know how to handle it. And I was a terrible brat about it. I was so mean to her. But, you know, I remember it was during the holidays and we went into the town square. All the families in Aguadilla had tables lined up and on the perimeters, and everyone brought their special dish to be presented as a community. And I ate so much. My stomach was so big. And my aunt was like, "Ay, please, you look like a little pig. You're going to throw up." And I was like, "No, I'm not. Not this time. I am not throwing up anything." And I ate and ate. And I remember kept saying, "What's this? And what's that? And what's this? And what's that?" And I wanted to know everything. And it was really special to me because I felt that I belonged. I felt like an alien at inside the convent, which we called the home. But when I went to Puerto Rico, I was like, this is me. This is me. All the tastes are familiar. The smells are familiar. And even the new foods that I was taking in just felt right to me. And I felt a part of things, you know? And when I went to my tía Aya's house up in the hills, you know, helping her smash the garlic, I remember as a little girl, I just started crying and she just smiled at me. And she goes, "This is who you are, Rosita. You don't have to cry." And I was like, "Oh, I should have put that in my book. Did I put that in there? Did I put that in there?"
Well, this can be the second book. You definitely talked about the hamburger and fries in the book.
Yeah. Even though I'm the first person born here in America, I'm Puerto Rican first. I'm a Puerto Rican American. And even as a little girl, I understood that.
Is there something that you cook today that especially makes you think of your aunt that you lived with in Brooklyn?
That's a very good question. Every single Puerto Rican dish I cook makes me think of her. And I talk about her every time I cook. And you can ask my husband and, you know, my cousin Sixto, when he comes over, he's irritating, but I love him, you know. And, you know, but when he comes over, I always cook for him too. That's how I say to you, I know this sounds weird, but if I cook for you, it means that I like you. So if you come over my house, I'm going to be respectful and offer you a cup of coffee or water. And if I really don't like you, I go, all right. You good? You know? But if I really love you and I really care about you, or if I really want to get to know you, before you walk in that door, I've already have a meal waiting for you. And my aunt taught me that too.
Well, Rosie, it means so much to us that you came here after a long day, and it's been so great to have you here to share some of your stories. Rosie's autobiography is called Handbook for an Unpredictable Life. Rosie's autobiography is called...
Shut up! Let him get him out! Oh, my God.
Now we're going to have to leave this whole part in.
You know? Save the laughter and applause when I leave. Like, yeah. I was fabulous.
That's right. Handbook for an Unpredictable Life, How I Survived Sister Renata and My Crazy Mother and Still Came Out Smiling with Great Hair. Let's have a big hand for Rosie Perez.
Thank you.
Coming up tomorrow, the fifth and final episode in our series, Other People's Food. That'll be more of what we taped at our live show the other day. And it'll feature comedian Michelle Buteau and artist Ashok Kandabolu. Ashok talks about how he'd feel if the South Indian food he grew up with was suddenly embraced and then bastardized by Americans. He says if that happens, he hopes at least the person who gets rich off it is an Indian sellout, not a white guy.
Because, you know, a white guy doing it, it's just you activate that same neural pathway of like, ah, kill, kill, kill. Sellout is like, he looks like me. Brother kill brother? No, bad. Right. You're like activating a larger part of the brain and you have to tackle it.
While you wait for that one, catch up on episodes 1 through 3 of our series. And please make sure you subscribe to this Sporkful in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. That way you'll never miss an episode. And while you're there, please leave us a good review. Give us a good review in iTunes. It helps us move up the rankings. It helps other people to find our show. So, thank you. This show is a production of WNYC Studios and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sani and me. Special thanks to Paula Schumann. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
I'm Shalita from Wallkill, New York, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.